Turn to Proverbs 7 and verse 23. I'm going to cover another three verses tonight, and then we will finally finish Proverbs chapter 7 next week, Lord willing. We're still talking about the encounter with the strange woman that this young man that Solomon was observing out his window, what he saw. And now we get to the part where the encounter's all over, and she has seduced him with her flattering words. And he went after her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, is where we left off last week. And then we have this verse, verse 23, till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. So we'll look at that first part, till a dart strike through his liver. A dart is a pointed missile weapon thrown by the hand, a light spear or javelin, also applied to pointed missiles in general, including arrows, etc. And the dart is going to strike through his liver, and that's another way of saying that this man has a death sentence. Now, if you look in 2 Samuel 18, in verse 14, this is what happened to David's son Absalom. You remember when Absalom tried to steal the kingdom right out from underneath David's nose, and he raised this sedition, got himself some men, and he was killed by when he was riding on a mule, and he got his head caught in a tree, probably from his long hair that he liked to grow. It says that he grew his hair out long every year, and then he would cut it off. In the summertime, when it would get hot, and it weighed like three shekels or something, I forget, it was a lot of hair anyway, so he's probably riding in this mule, and his hair is blowing in the wind, and it catches in a tree, and there he hangs from his hair that he shouldn't have had in the first place. And a guy named, what's his name? I forgot, Joab, comes along and strikes a dart, three darts through him. 2 Samuel 18 and verse 14 says, then said Joab, I may not tarry thus with thee. And he took three darts in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak. He actually didn't die quite yet. They kill him after they take him down from there. But, you know, a dart through the heart is a pretty good wound. A dart through the liver is going to end up with the same thing. I have a feeling if you shot a buck with an arrow right through the liver, would it die pretty quickly?
Slowly. No,
very slowly.
You'd find it the next day.
Okay. Yeah. A deadly wound.
Yeah, they're going to die, but it's going to take long.
That actually makes sense with the guy going to the strange woman. Chances are he's not going to die immediately, but he's going to die a slow, painful death where he can think about it for a while. So that kind of makes sense, I guess. Now, the liver is a vital organ, and an animal that would be thrust through the liver would die, as Austin just confirmed, having slain a few animals in his day. Proverbs 7 and verse 22. Remember, it says he goeth after her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks. And then in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 20, Paul tells the account of, in the Old Testament, when God met with Moses on Mount Sinai, and he said that if so much as a beast touched the mount, it would be thrust through. In other words, it would be killed because it wasn't to be there. Hebrews 12 and verse 20 says, for they could not endure that which was commanded, and if so much as a beast touch the mountain, it should be stoned or thrust through with a dart. So I suppose that could be the way that this ox that was going to the slaughter could have been killed, by being thrust through as with a dart. And here this young man is going to go into this strange woman until a dart strikes through his liver. So in other words, he has a death sentence awaiting him. And then Solomon goes on to say, and as a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. So just as the ox walks to the slaughter, and the bird hastens to the snare, and doesn't know that it's going to be their demise, so this young man goes into the strange woman's house as a foolish beast, as a brute beast, not knowing what's going to happen to him. He should have known, and we'll talk about that in a second. But he just goes right in there, just like the ox would, just like the bird that wasn't even paying attention, doesn't realize the snare is there, and the little bird just flies straight in there, and before you know it, he's caught. And this is what's going to happen to this guy as well. So a snare is used for catching and killing animals. It's a device for capturing small wild animals or birds, usually consisting of a string with a running noose in which a foot or the head may be caught. It also can be used figuratively, and that's how it's being used here, at least referring to this man. It's interesting that a snare is a noose. Like, this guy's going to hang himself, essentially. He's going to be caught in the snare. And it really makes sense that Solomon would use this analogy of a bird in the snare, because the strange woman's heart is said to be snares and nets in Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 26. And we've looked at this verse a time or two in this study already. Solomon says, "And I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, and her hands as bands. Whoso pleaseth God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be taken by her." And this just perfectly describes this man that we're looking at here in chapter 7 there of Proverbs. This woman has snares and nets in her heart, and he's just going straight into it, not realizing what he's doing. And that snare is just going to be like a noose right around his neck. And there he's going to hang. It's quite sad, isn't it? And then if you turn over just a chapter, this guy, men, will get snared in an evil time. And that's what's going to happen to this guy. He's going to have an evil time. Although it's going to be under the guise of a good time, and it's going to be good at first, which is usually how sin works. It's usually fun to start out with, and then it ends up in death. Wages of sin is death. Ecclesiastes 9:12 says, For man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in the snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time when it falleth suddenly upon them. Now, if you look at the context of this verse, I was using this verse because it's referring to a lot of the same things that Solomon is talking about here. In the context of it, it's actually referring to men just getting snared perchance, just as happenstance would have it. If you look just in the previous verse, he says, "I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happeneth to them all." And then he says that men get snared in an evil time. So in the case of this young man, though, he's not being snared by chance. It's just he just didn't have bad luck or something as he stumbled into the strange woman's house. He's being snared because of his foolishness and his sin. So that's when it really hurts, is when you can look back on it and realize, you know what, I didn't stumble into that just because, I just happen to be the unlucky one. I'm here, I'm hanging by this noose because of the choices that I made. And, that one's going to hurt. It says, "As a bird hasteth to the snare." To haste is to cause, to move more quickly, to urge, drive, or press on, to quicken, accelerate, hurry. So just as the foolish bird hurries to the snare, so sinners waste no time sinning and sealing their judgment. And, we've probably seen people that just run right headlong into something and don't think about it or should think about it and waste no time doing something foolish or sinful. There's a verse that I'm reminded of there in Proverbs where it says a wise man feareth and departeth from evil, but the fool rageth and is confident. Right? So the wise man looks and says, you know what, I better not do this. And the fool, he just plows straight on ahead. And that's what this guy's going to do. People like this guy are sinners in general who like to make haste. They make haste to shed blood, as we saw in Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 16. Like I've said before, sometimes sinners put us to shame because they make haste to do their sin. They are diligent in planning and scheming. they're not going to go to bed at night until they've caused some to fall, right? We've looked at some of those verses. They really work hard at it, and sometimes we're quite lazy in our Christianity, aren't we? Proverbs 1 and verse 16 says, "For their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood." Now, this guy's making haste to shed blood, his own. He's going to hang himself. And then you have this verse here in Micah, which shows that the wicked like to do evil with both hands earnestly. They really put their all into it. They kind of take the verse that says, "Whatsoever thou doest, do it with all thy might," and they apply that to wickedness with all their might, as unto the devil and not unto men. Micah 7 and verse 3. Says that they may do evil with both hands earnestly. The prince asketh, and the judge asketh for a reward, and the great man, he uttereth his mischievous desire. So they wrap it up. And this is how conspiracies happen in high places. And you think about it. I mean, how many times this has happened throughout history? The prince asketh. So, you know, Woodrow Wilson says, "Hey, I want to go into World War I. I want to go and massacre a bunch of people. I want to drag the nation into a war they don't want to be in." And the judge asketh for a reward. So the Supreme Court says, "Oh, you know, we won't outlaw this. We won't call this unconstitutional to conscript all these poor young guys to go over there and be massacred." And the great man, he uttereth his mischievous desire. The Federal Reserve says, "Hey, as long as I can finance both sides of this thing, we're good to go." Right? How many times has this happened? The prince asketh. Obama says, "I want Obamacare." The judge says, "I want a reward." You know, we make sure Roberts is rewarded for voting the right way. The great man uttereth his desire. That's the big healthcare companies. As long as we get our part of this thing. How many times has something like that happened? They do evil with both hands earnestly. They don't waste any time. And then it says, this young man here, he hasteth as a bird to the snare, as a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. So he is ignorant because he knoweth not that it's for his life. That's what ignorant means, right? He's an ignorant man. But there's two different types of ignorance. There's ignorance where you truly don't know, and you really wouldn't bear culpability for that because you just don't, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And then there's another kind of ignorance called willing ignorance, where you don't know on purpose. Like, you probably actually do know, or you know that you could know, but you don't want to know. Now, how many times have you, maybe you've had this experience, I know some of us have, you're talking to somebody, and they say, "Why don't you celebrate Christmas?" You say, "Well, let me explain it to you." And you start, and they're like, "You know, wait, just stop. I don't want to know. I don't want to know." There have been people I've heard of, I don't know if anybody's actually done that to me, but I've heard of people that have done that. "I don't want to know. Because if I know, now I'm going to have to do something about it." That's called willing ignorance.
Self-deception?
It is self. Yes, that's exactly self-deception. Now, if you look in 2 Peter 3 and verse 5, 2 Peter 3, 5. Now, that may work. You may deceive yourself with that, and you can tell yourself, "I didn't know." But you're not going to deceive God with that. He knows that you knew or could have known. Peter says, "For this they willingly are ignorant of, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of the water and in the water." You have to be a willingly ignorant fool to not know that the heavens were of old by the word of God, that God created the heavens and the earth by his own power, just by speaking it into existence. You have to be a fool not to know that. Because God's given his word and it's gone throughout all the earth, and probably everybody in the world has heard Genesis 1:1. You have to be willingly ignorant. Or as Kent Hovind says, in the Greek, that means dumb on purpose. Which it doesn't, but that is funny anyway. Yeah. See, this guy is willingly ignorant, because if you turn back to Proverbs chapter 7 and look at verses 19 and 20, as we looked at here a week or two ago, the strange woman plainly told him that her husband's away. So he can't say, "Oh, I didn't know. I thought I was just fornicating. I didn't realize I was committing adultery as well." Not that that would probably buy you many points with God, but it would be less sinful to be just fornicating, but he knew what he was doing. Verses 19 and 20, she says, "For the goodman," that's her husband, we looked at that a couple of weeks ago, "for the goodman is not at home. He has gone a long journey. He hath taken a bag of money with him and will come home at the day appointed." So she tells him this, of course, to assure him that, don't worry, he's not coming back for a while. The day appointed, it's on the calendar and it's a long ways away. He's got a bag of money with him, so he's not coming home for a while. She used that as part of the enticement. Now, if he were to say later on, well, I didn't know she was married. I mean, she said the goodman. Well, I don't know what that means. You know, he went with a bag of money. I thought maybe it was just the lawn keeper or something. Yeah, I didn't know, right? You can't. That's willing ignorance right there. And being a Jew, he would have certainly known that it's a capital crime to commit adultery. He would have had to have known that if he was any kind of a Jew at all. In Leviticus 20 and verse 10, that was laid down there in pretty plain language that if you commit adultery, you and the adulteress are going to be put to death. Leviticus 20 and verse 10. Says, "And the man that committeth adultery with another man's wife, even he that committeth adultery with his neighbor's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death." Now, when it says there, "and knoweth not that it's for his life," this is why I say it's willing ignorance. Because more than likely, he would have known that if you do this, if you're caught anyway, you are going to lose your life. That's why I say willing ignorance. Now, in his lustful exuberance, he may have forgotten what the punishment for adultery was, or he might have thought that he just wouldn't get caught. Right? It could be either one. You know, whenever you stop thinking and start lusting, then you just kind of forget about all the punishment, and if you remember it, then you think, oh, you know, nobody's going to find out. Husband's gone. It's dark. Nobody's seeing me except for the king. But other than that, you know, nobody's seeing me here. He's deceived himself. This is why it's crucial to read and learn the scriptures well, so that we know God's principles and they're ingrained in us and they'll keep us from sin. Look in Psalm 119, verses 9 through 11. This is why I continually harp on the importance of reading the Bible every day and hiding it in our hearts. We did something fun last night. I've done this on a couple of occasions when we've gotten together, but maybe we'll do this here before Bible study one time. And you guys have been reading the Proverbs for a while, right? I think most of you read the Proverbs every day. So last night, we just took pick the proverb of the day, you know, 25 it was, and I read the first part of the proverb, and then one of them had to say the second part of the proverb, of course, without looking at the Bible. And you'd be amazed, if you've been doing that for a few years, reading them every day, you'd be amazed. You hear the first part, and the second part just rattles right off your tongue. So anyway, maybe we'll do that sometime and see.
But you got to use the Bible, and they didn't.
That's because I'm...
Oh, I like that point.
Yeah.
It's the teacher that gets to give the quiz. Psalm 119, 9 through 11. "Wherewithal shall a young man cleanse his way? By taking heed thereto, according to thy word. With my whole heart have I sought thee, O let me not wander from thy commandments. Thy word have I hid in mine heart, that I might not sin against thee." So that's how you cleanse your way, by taking heed according to the word of God. You hide it in your heart, and when it's hidden there, you won't sin against God. Why? Well, because as soon as you have that thought about sinning, you've got this verse, like your conscience in the back of your head, saying, no, don't do that. Right? I mean, how easy is it to remember, thou shalt not commit adultery? I bet you every one of you have that verse memorized. Right? You might not be able to cite it and say what the verse reference is, but I bet you every one of you could cite that or could say that verse right now, thou shalt not commit adultery. When you've got that stuck in your head, and then the strange woman comes along, well, what's going to come run through your head? thou shalt not commit adultery. Thy word have I hid in mine heart, that I might not sin against thee. That's why it's so important to read the word and to have not just the simple basic ones like that, but to have a whole host of scriptures running through your mind. And maybe you can't remember the exact verse, but you know you've heard the principle and you've learned the principle so many times that you know, nope, I can't do that. It'll keep you from sin. So that takes care of verse 23. Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.